Our next speaker is Bill Stettler, also from Arcades, and the title of the presentation is Habitat Classification for Ecological Risk Assessment Using Aerial Photography and GIS Data in a Two-Stage Expert System. Bill.
Well, given I only have 12 minutes, I won't go over that title again. To start with some background, this is an ecological habitat classification used to drive the modeling of exposure of different animals to hazardous chemicals. And unlike a human risk assessment, the point there is to model out where animals are likely to be rather than sort of land use characteristics. Our input data was, in this case, New York State Digital Orthophotography. Every state has their own orthophotography program at this point, where they basically will fly the state every few years for a full collect. We also use soils data, Sergo in this case, and tax parcel data. And our output was a land cover map that had 15 land cover classes, fairly detailed, minimapping unit of about a 20th of an acre. In some cases, that minimapping unit might be quite sinuous and narrow. In some cases, it might be more square, but fairly small minimapping unit. Covered about 150 square miles. 173 megabytes. I'm not going to go into a great deal of detail about where this is taken and what it was done for because the project is still ongoing, so we can't really talk about the client and what it was done for. So if you recognize your house or something like this, or your photographs, please don't shout out where it is. It'll be a little vague. The point of the exposure model is basically to figure out how much exposure of a chemical or an agent is an animal likely to experience. So first of all, this requires knowing, you know, the concentrations of a given chemical and where those concentrations are, but it also requires knowing where the animal is likely to spend its time. So again, unlike a human risk assessment, where we might have various models of land use and by different types of people, we're more geared towards habitat in the case of animals. So we need to model a fairly detailed habitat analysis of the area as well as knowing where the chemicals are. So the imagery, if you're unfamiliar with false color infrared, this is a false color infrared image, fairly typical technique for looking at natural resources. Near infrared is very useful for determining vegetative vigor. Any vegetation undergoing photosynthesis reflects highly in the near infrared, so that near infrared band is useful. A typical way to do false color infrared is you shift the three bands over, so instead of having red, green, blue, you have green, red, and near infrared. So anything that looks red is actually showing up, is actually reflecting a great deal in the near infrared. And it looks green is actually reflecting the red, and anything that looks red is actually reflecting the green. Blue essentially gets left out because it's less useful for these applications. So that's the cause for the reddish tinge. Now, in addition to the photography, we use Sergo soil data and tax parcel data. You can see one of the issues with tax parcel data is it's done town by town. If you look back here, we were looking at basically a dam across a river. This town over here considered that dam as some sort of tax parcel, whereas this town over here figured it wasn't actually being taxed, they just leave it out, so it's just part of the river. So it looks, so as far as tax parcel goes, we had some inconsistencies from place to place about how it was handled. The challenge of the imaging, the reason we brought in this ancillary data, now, this is an extreme close-up, basically. We've zoomed all the way in. This is 2-foot resolution data. There's typical issues with any kind of high spatial resolution imagery. People like to use high spatial resolution imagery whenever possible, basically because humans are really good at pattern recognition. The higher the spatial resolution, the easier the pattern recognition is. The issue is, however, if you're dealing with a computer doing the analysis, is that pixel by pixel things look very different even when they should look the same. So for example, we've got shadows get cast. So we've got two pieces of ground that really are the same type of land cover that look very different. You can see these houses, the sunlit side looks very different than the shaded side, pixel by pixel. You'll have the same effect on tree canopies. The sunlit side of things look different than the shaded side. They're all part of the same object, all part of the same land cover class, but they look very different. In particular with this image, we had two other challenges. One is the time of year. It's New York State Orthophotography. This is ortho images typically taken in the spring for leaf-off imagery. So deciduous trees have no leaves on them. Makes it easier to see the ground, which is great for certain applications, not so great when you're looking at vegetation classes. The deciduous trees basically don't show up looking like trees. They just sort of create a little bit of fuzz and variation in the image. It's also going to create a challenge with crops because it's a very dynamic time of year for crops. Some, if you have two fields with the same crop, might look very different because it's taken in April and one field quite a ways along in the growth, and another neighboring field might be much further behind, essentially bare dirt. So you get a lot of variability, basically. Also, you notice the reason I zoomed in this far is you can see this sort of linear artifact in the image, these up and down, side to side groupings of pixels. It's in what's called Mr. Sid format. It's a highly compressed image storage format. Makes it very easy to move the images around, put them online and so on, but it does create these problems down at the pixel level. If we had to use uncompressed, it would have been massive images and problems, but this also causes some issues. Because of this, we brought in these ancillary data to try to help us. A pure image-based technique wasn't going to be good enough to get us this 15 classes, so we brought in this ancillary data. That way, to bring it all together and start this, we used an expert system. Stage one of the expert system basically looked at this basic data and used a set of rules developed by a quote-unquote expert, hence the name, to bring it together and come up with a set of classes. You can see it's sort of a hierarchical system, so you might have a class, some rules down here that say it's some sort of forest, some additional rules that maybe differentiate between deciduous and coniferous forest and so on. Now, these were all based essentially on a 2-foot pixel again, but rather than looking at the imagery pixel by pixel, we first segmented the imagery. So rather than looking at a pixel that might be part of a tree canopy, we try to segment it into clusters of pixels. You know, we have 50 pixels that all represented a single tree. So rather than looking at the pixel value for a given band of a given image, we'd look at maybe the average pixel response across the entire cluster, across the entire segment. So it's all done on segments, either the image segment or the text parcel segment. And the main use of the text parcel segment is it's good for differentiating between things like, is this a lawn or an alfalfa field? If it's part of an 800-acre parcel, chances are it's not someone's lawn. And the same token, if it's a half-acre parcel, chances are it's not agriculture. Then after getting those initial set of classes, we use a second expert system, essentially, to come up with the final set of classes. I'll run through the whole thing from start to finish here on just a piece of the imagery. Now, again, this is the raw imagery. You can see this is our springtime field, not a whole lot of growth in the fields. You can see we've got a couple hedgerows, a stream through here, and a stand of coniferous forest. And in the middle here, you see what I was talking about. This is all actually deciduous trees in here, but doesn't even show up very well as trees. It just looks like sort of a fuzzy version of bare ground because they're basically leafless trees. So the first stage of that expert system gives us these sort of basic classes. You can see one thing, we've got pretty broad classes, just like wetland and so on. We have classes that really aren't classes at all of land cover. They're just shadow. You can also see it's very spotty, very speckled. You got a lot of mistakes here. We're classifying these as water when they're actually shadows and so on. So this is just our first pass at it. So the first step we do after that first expert system is generalize the polygons. And this is where we got to our 1/20th of an acre. It shows that as a sort of striking a balance between getting a high resolution, not having too many polygons, not getting too much information. So these are all, so anything that was less than a 20th of an acre is basically merged with the surrounding polygons. It's sort of melted into the surrounding polygons. This is going to fix the boundaries of our final map, but these classes themselves might change. This is a pretty messy slide. I apologize. It's kind of hard to see. I originally had like 10 slides through here, but I didn't have time for that today. The second expert system essentially takes those original classes, looks at this generalized polygon. The purple outlines represent each of the generalized polygons, and we look at what is the percentage of the original class, the first stage class, within each of those polygons. So we're basically counting pixels in that. So you can see if we had a broad polygon of a field out here, the vast majority of those are agricultural pixels, which is what you'd expect, with a few speckles in between. And if you had the second stage expert system is going to look at something like that and say, well, 95% of it's agriculture, it's an agricultural polygon, we don't really care. it might look at a different polygon and say this is 50% deciduous, 50% coniferous. Maybe the final class is some sort of mixed forest. Or it might look at it and say this is 70% agriculture, 30% deciduous. Actually, this is probably some sort of pasture succeeding into forest, a lot of shrub scrub on it. So there's a pretty large set of rules that go into that, which eventually lead to the second set of polygons. And here's where we get the much more detailed classes. We break our agriculture down into multiple different kinds of classes, break our forest down into, is it open or closed canopy? We find a mixed forest class, and so on and so forth. And the sort of the important thing to notice here is we've lost some of these hedgerows here, but we've sort of captured the fact that there is a hedgerow over here, even if maybe we left a gap in there or something. You can remember that patch of deciduous trees that was in the middle here got captured, but basically this whole rest of the polygon got generalized into one big evergreen forest of closed canopy. The results, as far as broad classes go, if we look at just our broad classes, agriculture versus wetland versus evergreen, we had about an 81% overall accuracy. If you look at detailed classes where we start thinking about row crop versus pasture or open canopy evergreen versus closed canopy evergreen, that drops to about 73% if you factor in area, all the way down to 47% if you go polygon by polygon, basically because the really small polygons tend to be the least accurate. So if we look at, we had several million polygons, and if we weighted each polygon the same, looked at our most detailed classes, we only had 47% accuracy. If, on the other hand, we treated a 200-acre polygon weighted much higher than a 20th-acre polygon, then our accuracy is more like 73% for those detailed classes. So this is comparable to National Land Cover database accuracy for their more general classes. Their NLC Anderson Level 2 accuracy for this area is about 70% for patch, 58% for pixel. They have a 30-meter pixel, which is comparable to a 20th acre minimum mapping unit. However, the caveat there is that NLCD agreement is defined as matching either the primary or sort of a secondary class. We didn't do that. If we had if we classified something as closed canopy evergreen and a field visit showed it to be open canopy evergreen, we said it was wrong. We didn't say close enough. We said that was a misclassification. And finally, this is sort of a comparison. Again, we got the raw imagery of a site up here. This is what it looks like after that first kind of messy first pass classification. We end up looking something like this. Again, you can see we may have opened up a few gaps in here, but compared to NLCD, if you sort of squint, you see that they're very similar. NLCD and our class both got the water, both got a strip of wetland, gets this residential area, and then the agriculture over here, but the obvious difference is that we also capture things like these hedgerows, strips of trees, and so on within the agricultural field. So the broader applicability here is this technique works best on a regional level. We use fairly detailed data, which is going to vary quite a bit from region to region. It requires a certain amount of expert knowledge on the area to run these expert systems. But once you've done that classification, it's pretty easy to merge, would be easy to merge these into larger areas. You could also further generalize it spatially. If you didn't want that kind of highly detailed level 20th acre, you could generalize it more while maintaining some of the detailed information. Just as an example, you could have a much larger unit of agriculture. Let's say this is a large unit of agriculture without hedgerows, or this is a large unit of agriculture with hedgerows. And finally, the pilot study we conduct with what I call suboptimal imagery. I think it would be hard to find imagery that was actually worse than the imagery used for this. It's free imagery. What we used is a spring collection. It was highly compressed. Again, better imagery is widely available. Almost impossible actually to get worse imagery at this point in time. So I think I managed to pull it off in about 12 minutes. Any questions?
Thank you, Brett.